seriously. And I would like to also mention that, and this is very key, that he has also mentioned, as the majority of Sudanese have mentioned, despite the severity of this conflict, there is only one solution and only one interest on the part of the majority of Sudanese, 99% of Sudanese, and that is the restoration of full civilian democracy. I know it's counterintuitive. It seems difficult at this stage to think a post-war in Sudan. There is, I think, that even if the American envoy has recognized, as I've said in this program a couple of times, that because of the lack of constituency, the lack of legitimacy, the kind of venal, kind of instrumental, self-interested political and economic objectives of these two warring parties, there is absolutely no other way to resolve this conflict except to support the vast majority of the civilian population and Sudanese inside and outside, and to continue what we call the objectives of what Sudanese call al-Thawr al-Majid, the glorious revolution. That is really the only solution, and this is what even the U.S. envoy has reiterated, and I would argue primarily because he's been talking to Sudanese.
Khalid Mustafa Madani, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Associate Professor of Political Science and Islamic Studies at McGill University, also Chair of the African Studies Program. He is from Sudan. We will link to your piece in Merit, headlined The Struggle for Sudan. When we come back, at least 9 Google workers are arrested after staging sit-ins at the company's offices in New York and the Google Cloud CEO's office in Sunnyvale, California, to protest the tech giant's work with the Israeli government. We'll speak with 2 of the arrested workers. Stay with us. By Russia. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Several Google employees, at least 9, were arrested Tuesday evening after staging sit-ins at the company's offices in New York and in California to protest the tech giant's work with the Israeli government. The sit-ins, organized by the activist group No Tech for Apartheid, took place at Google Cloud CEO Thomas Kurian's office in Sunnyvale, California, and the 10th-floor commons of Google's New York office, which is right around the corner from Democracy Now!. Protesters are calling for Google to withdraw from a $1.2 billion contract to provide cloud computing services to the Israeli government, known as Project Nimbus. Last week, Time magazine reported Google's work on the project involves providing direct services to the Israeli military. The sit-ins were accompanied by outdoor protests at the Google offices here in New York and in Sunnyvale, San Francisco, and Seattle, Washington. Workers and outside activists have opposed the contract since it was signed in 2021, but protests have ramped up over the past several months since Israel's latest bombardment of Gaza. No Tech for Apartheid says Google is enabling and profiting from Israel's use of artificial intelligence to develop a kill list to target Palestinians in Gaza for assassination with little human oversight. The Israeli military is also using Google photos for facial recognition across Gaza and the West Bank to identify and detain Palestinians en masse. No Tech for Apartheid has published an open letter co-signed by 18 other groups that demands Google and Amazon immediately cancel their work on Project Nimbus. The letters gathered more than 94,000 signatures from the general public. For more, we're joined by two of the arrested Google workers. Rae Westrick is with us. She's a Google worker organizer with No Tech for Apartheid campaign. Among the workers who occupied Google Cloud CEO's Thomas Kurian's office in Sunnyvale, California. She's joining us from Sunnyvale. And here in New York, we're joined by Mohamed Khatami, a Google software engineer who was arrested at the sit-in at Google's office in New York. He's joining us along with Gabriel Schuvener, a former software engineer at Google Research and organizer with the No Tech for Apartheid campaign. And before that, he was with Jewish Diaspora and Tech. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Mohamed, let's begin with you. You were just hours ago in the jail in local police precinct. Talk about why you were willing to get arrested.
Well, rather than, you know, consider the demands that we've been raising for, you know, years now, and, you know, listening to workers and considering the things that we've been raising, Thomas Kurian and Google execs basically chose to arrest workers for speaking out against the use of our technology to power the first AI-powered genocide. So we were willing to get arrested for that because at this point, we aren't willing to be lied to by our higher-ups anymore. We aren't willing to be disrespected by our higher-ups anymore. And we wanted to take that to the offices and make sure it was understood by them. Yeah.
How do you sense is the support that you have among other Google workers, the degree of the dissatisfaction with the policies of Google?
Yeah. I mean, Google has done a really good job at creating a culture of fear and retaliation against workers in general. But what we noticed was beautiful. So many people came up to our sit-in and basically showed support and felt that they were inspired by the work that we were doing and felt inspired to speak out, which is exactly what we were going for. We want workers to feel like we have the power to choose where our technology is going and who we're contributing to. So I felt really happy to see that. Yeah.
Rae Westrick, you're on the West Coast. You were arrested in California. Talk about this Project Nimbus and why you were willing to get arrested and what the response. Were you in the offices of the Google Cloud CEO?
Yes. We sat in at the office of Thomas Kurian, the Google Cloud CEO, to protest Project Nimbus, which is a $1.2 billion contract with the Israeli government and military between Google and Amazon. We also were demanding the protection of our coworkers, especially our Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim coworkers, who have been consistently retaliated against, harassed, and doxed for speaking out about Project Nimbus and, you know, the humanity of Palestinians. So we were there in solidarity with them. We were there to protest the contract, which is being directly sold, providing technology directly to the Israeli military as it inflicts a genocide on Palestinians in Gaza. And yeah, that is why we chose to sit in Thomas Kurian's office.
And Rae, was there any response from the CEO or his office? And are you concerned about losing your job? Why did you decide to take this action?
Yeah, we did not receive any response from the CEO, and I think it's really telling that they would rather let us sit there for over 10 hours and arrest us for peacefully sitting in his office than have leadership engage in our demands in any way at all. So we've received no response from the CEO, and we were forcibly removed by the police. And working at Google has been, you know, an honor. I really love my team. I love the work I do, but I can't in good conscience not do anything while Google is a part of this contract, while Google is selling technology to the Israeli military or any military. And so it was a risk I was willing to take, and I think it's a risk a lot of my coworkers are willing to take because a lot of people are really agitated about this and have consistently made their demands clear and have faced retaliation for it. So I chose to sit in knowing the risks out of care for the use of our technology, out of care for the impact of our technology, and care for my coworkers.
For our radio audience, I wanted to let people know that Ray is wearing a T-shirt that says Googler Against Genocide with genocide in the famous multicolor of Google that it's so well known for. I wanted to bring Gabriel Schubiner into this conversation, a former software engineer at Google Research and organizer with the No Tech for Apartheid campaign, and ask you, you know, we had you on more than a year ago. This is before Israel's latest attack on Gaza, talking about exactly this. And you were with the Jewish organization of Google workers at that time speaking out. Talk about the whole history of Project Nimbus.
Yeah.
And the resistance against it.
Yeah, thank you so much. So Project Nimbus was signed in May of 2021. While bombs were being dropped on Gaza, while Palestinians were being evicted from Sheikh Jarrah and beaten at Al-Aqsa Mosque, that was really a point. When we found out about Project Nimbus, personally for me, it was a turning point where I no longer felt able to continue doing my work without engaging and organizing. There was a group of people that felt very similarly, so we started a petition. We were connected, got connected with Amazon workers, with community organizations at Jewish Voice for Peace and Empower Change, and spun a campaign out of that. I want to be clear, like, the campaign really is driven by worker concerns and worker needs around the ethical use of our labor, as well as the direct workplace concerns of the health and safety concerns around working at a company that is facilitating genocide. We've known for a long time that this project was directly targeted at the military. It's been reported in press that Google was giving trainings directly to the IOF. We know that Google gave trainings directly to Mossad. We know that the IOF.
When you say IOF, explain the term. Because people are used to hearing IDF, Israeli Defense Forces.
Yeah, it's Israeli Occupation Forces, just to indicate, so we're not repeating their messaging, that their really aggressive repression of Palestinians is an act of defense. We know that it's an act of occupation, so we say IOF. So we've known for a long time that this project was directly targeted at the Israeli military, but it was only recently through this last contract that Google signed directly with the IOF that we recognize that Google is really doubling down, that this contract is directly intended to facilitate military use. And we know that Google was chosen over other companies because of the advanced AI technology that they're able to offer. So given that we've learned how the IOF is using AI in this war, we really see this as like a really critical campaign for Palestinian liberation. To speak to your point about the resistance against the project, we've been working against this project as workers for since it was signed 3 years ago. We have been doing organizing. We have been doing, you know, base building and labor organizing. We've had protests externally and internally. We've had signed petitions. We've done outreach to our executives through internal forums, through chat rooms, through every available means. Because I think, you know, understanding, like, this contract really is it really is an incredible issue for our work. Like, all workers' labor at Google, so many workers' labor is contributing directly to this project because all of the technology at Google is like deeply intertwined with each other. So,
Well,
so it's really important.
I wanted to ask you, the average person who's not a Google worker who might support your stand who uses Google multiple times a day around the world, what are you calling for them to do?
Right. So, I mean, we're calling for everyone around the world to really, like, help us with awareness, like, help us make it known that Google is a war profiteer. I think Google is so deeply embedded in people's lives, right, that it's hard to ask for a boycott. But I think we are calling specifically on people in the tech industry to divest from Google and Amazon. Google Cloud Services and Amazon Web Services underlie the vast majority of the internet. But there are other options. So technology workers actually have a lot of power to shift this paradigm and to, like, remove technology from this deep complicity with the Israeli occupation.
Mohammed Khatami, can you talk about your own family background and why you so particularly care right now about what's going on in Gaza?
Yeah, yes. So I come from a Muslim family. I was raised Muslim. It's really hard to wake up seeing the images of children slaughtered and know that the work you're doing is contributing to this. I've lost sleep. It's just been extremely difficult to focus on work and think that you're working for something that is contributing to the mass slaughter that's taking place. And for speaking out against that, I've literally been called a supporter of terrorism, which is something that
called by,
you know, by coworkers and HR and people in the company, supporter of terrorism, which is, you know, something is, it's like a schoolyard insult. It's something I haven't heard since middle school. And that's just an example of the retaliation and the harassment and the hatred that we face just for speaking up against our work being used.
Are
in this
you
way.
Concerned about losing your job?
Absolutely, but it doesn't. It's not even important to me at all compared to working for something that is meaningful and having a good impact on the planet. I don't want to have any association with this genocide, and I would hope that Google would change their mind about it as well.
And finally, Ray Westrick, where do you see this movement going from here? And can you talk more about the Jewish-Muslim alliance around this among Google workers and former Google workers?
Yeah, I only see this movement growing and continuing to apply pressure. We receive so much support during the sit-in. I've received so many personal messages from people, thanking me for being vocal and asking how they can be more vocal and get more involved. So I think this is absolutely growing. I think Google knows that that this will continue, that, you know, workers are very agitated about this and will continue to speak up and apply pressure. And I think that's why it was important for them to silence us. But this movement is growing and more people are finding out about this and more people are willing to organize and risk their jobs in order to take a stand against complicity and genocide.
Well, I want to thank.
And yeah, I think this has been a really unifying campaign for people of all backgrounds. And I know specifically a lot of us came together because we were specifically concerned about how Google has treated and retaliated against our Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim colleagues, especially like Mohammed mentioned, a lot of them have experienced harassment and doxing for speaking out in like the appropriate channels at Google and have been consistently ignored and harassed and retaliated against. And so we had to come together to say that we can't let this happen anymore. We have to come together in protection of our coworkers and each other and in protection of, you know, the ethical use of our technology to make sure that we're not building technology that's being used for harm. So I think it's been a really unifying campaign that is really grounded in taking care of each other and really grounded in making a positive impact and not facilitating more harm with technology.
I want to thank you all for being with us. Ray Westrick and Mohammed Khatami are both Google workers who were arrested yesterday. Ray in the offices of the Google Cloud CEO in Sunnyvale, California, and Mohammed here in New York. Also, Gabriel Schubiner, former software engineer at Google Research and an organizer with the No Tech for Apartheid campaign, before that with Jewish Diaspora in Tech. Next up, 4,000 Volkswagen workers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, begin voting on whether to join the United Auto Workers as it tries to expand in the South. Stay with us.
You see the tyrants buckle when the lies start to crumble. The high turn humble when the empire tumble. The bone chilling condition, war criminal villain. The pronouns are pronounced as chosen and victim. The bombs in the billions to rain on the children. The Holy Land built on mass graves you're filling. The poets and the singers got stories in their spirit. Owners in the business oppose it when they fear it. But the trees don't forget it. The breeze blow the message. The rivers and seas hold the image. The tears on our cheeks and the beards hold the sweetest little dream. Yeah, Philistine, repeated in our dreams. When the time turns timeless, the meek finally speak. Oppressors beg the fire to cease. The hearts go blind and so the eyes go to sleep. And who peeping? The ruins that you're seeing. That's you in that museum. Can you feel it?
Everyone kept dancing, but it was all collapsing. The warning lights were flashing.
The Collapse by the Muslim American rapper Brother Ali and Unjust, a Jewish beatmaker and animator from Ohio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Today, in a closely watched election, 4,000 Volkswagen workers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, start to vote on whether to organize with the United Auto Workers. This could be the UAW's first big victory as they try to expand into the southern United States after huge contract wins last year with the Detroit companies General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis. Pro-union Volkswagen workers in Tennessee spoke in a video produced by a More Perfect Union.
Our health care costs went up almost 15%. Well, they gave us a small 11% increase after the big three negotiated their contract. Well, our insurance costs went up, so it ate up. So we don't see any of that.
Well, if we're going to work for a company like this and they're going to generate that kind of money, then why can't we have our fair share as well?
Volkswagen sales have shot out the roof. $78 billion profit over the past 3 years.
We were able to grow revenues and underlying operating results in a difficult economic environment.
We're the largest automaker in the world, but yet the employees are here struggling.
The loudest voices of the anti-union, they keep trying to press this notion that if we unionize, Volkswagen's going to shut us down. They're going to close their factory. They're not going to pull it out just because 4,000 employees out of 600,000 want to be organized. Not to mention the fact that all of their other factories are organized.
For more, we're joined by Hamilton Nolan, journalist who writes about labor and politics for In These Times and his Substack, How Things Work, where his latest piece is Trampoline Unionism, Power Expands, It Doesn't Contract. His new book is The Hammer, Power Inequality and the Struggle for the Soul of Labor. Hamilton, welcome back to Democracy Now! Talk about this epic struggle in Tennessee right now, the significance of the workers trying to unionize the Volkswagen plant.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This election is a big, big deal, probably the most important union election that this country has seen in years. It's been decades since UAW or anyone has successfully unionized a big auto plant like this down south. And, you know, it's important to understand that these companies are in the South in the first place because they think they can go there to escape unions, to escape regulation, to find more easily exploited workers. It's essentially a form of domestic offshoring. The companies use the South the same way they use Mexico. And so the UAW, which is coming off a big, big win in a national strike last year, has taken that energy that they had from the strike and funneled it directly into a big ambitious plan to organize not just one company down south, but all of the non-union auto companies down south. And this Volkswagen election is the first one to come up for a vote. So this is really going to be an extremely important indicator as to whether the UAW can finally crack these non-union auto plants down south. And if they're able to successfully pull off this Volkswagen election, and I think that, you know, all the reporting on the ground indicates that, you know, cautious optimism is probably warranted here. If they're able to win in Chattanooga, it sends a really powerful signal to all the other non-union auto workers down south that this is not a dream, that this is not something they have to be afraid of, that this is something that can actually be done. And I think you could really see this looking back as the first domino in something that changes the entire South.
And Hamilton, this plant is the only Volkswagen factory in the world without a union. How does the company, how did the company respond to the unionization effort and justify to its workers that this is the only plant that's not that it's not organized?
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. You know, particularly the European automakers are very used to working with unions all over the world, and the plants that they have down south are in many cases the only places where they don't have unions. And still, I think, you know, Volkswagen has claimed to be neutral in this election. I think the workers would tell you they probably haven't quite been neutral, but it really does go to illustrate how ridiculous the South's kind of model of economic development is, which is, for many generations, the South has put forward a theory, you know, that the way to do economic development is just to give companies everything they want, to create easily exploited and economically desperate workforce, and that is the thing that will attract businesses. And, you know, we saw six Southern governors come out with a joint statement yesterday warning workers not to join the UAW. And it was probably one of the most pathetic things I think we can ever see in our life. Governors of U.S. states catering to international corporations before the workers who are citizens of their own states. So again, you know, the South is really funneling money to international corporations for free, and the UAW is trying to put an end to that.
Well, and as you say, there's not only labor organizing spreading across the South, but there's also major gains that have occurred in California that you've written about, the $20 minimum wage for fast food workers there. Can you talk about the importance of that?
Yeah, California recently passed the $20 minimum wage for fast food workers. You know, A, it's obviously something that's good for fast food workers. But B, the interesting thing about that was it's sort of a step down the road towards sectoral bargaining, which means, you know, the ability to negotiate wages and working conditions for entire industries at once, not having to go store to store to store, unionizing every store in order to get a contract at each fast food outlet, which is nearly impossible and is why the fast food industry doesn't have any unions. You know, California establishing things like a wage board that can set a wage for a whole industry. It's a really interesting kind of step towards thinking bigger about ways to empower workers on an industry-wide level. It's something that a lot of people think is really the path for reaching workers on the scale that we need to reestablish union power in America, given how bad our labor laws are and how hard it is to organize at scale. And so it's encouraging. And it's also, I think, an illustration of what you're seeing all over the country, which is red states are running in a real negative direction on labor rights, and blue states, in response, are trying to become more and more progressive on labor rights. And I think that's a trend that's going to continue for a while.
We just have 15 seconds, Hamilton, but I wanted to ask you about Sean Fain, the head of UAW, being the guest of the Bidens at a White House dinner, and the UAW's stance calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. Do you think Sean Fain is getting through to President Biden?
I don't know if he's getting through to President Biden. I haven't seen a lot of evidence based on what Biden has done that Sean Fain has got through to him on that point. Biden's done a lot of nice things for the UAW. But as you said, the UAW and many, many other unions representing at this point the majority of union members in America have called for a ceasefire in Gaza. And that is one issue that Biden is really not being responsive to the labor movement on. So I hope that changes.
We want to thank you so much for being with us. Hamilton Nolan, labor journalist. His new book out is called The Hammer. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Ooh, la, 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 la. Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.